ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, 550, name 550, is Chakra Gadadhara, which I think you can understand the meaning of, those of you who are accustomed to studying Vaishnava literature or hearing topics about Vishnu, you can understand that this refers to him as being the holder of the discus weapon and the club. Yeah, generally Lord Vishnu is known as holding the Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. Here we have the here above the temple, we have the representation of the chakra and the shankha. But here, in this name, Chakra Gadadhara, are mentioned among the four objects that Lord Vishnu generally holds in his hands. These two are weapons. Ayodhya. He has other weapons also. Most prominently, he has five weapons. They all have names. The chakra is well known by the name of Sudarshana. That's the most famous of his weapons. And Gada, the name of the Gada is Komodaki. His conch is also known by name. Panchajanya, from Bhagavad Gita, we know, is mentioned there. His bow is Sharanga, so sometimes he's called Sharangada. And his sword is called Nandaki. So all these five are mentioned in the last verse of Sri Vishnu Sahasranama. This particular name is given in Ramayana, and elsewhere in Ramayana there's one incident described where Lord Rama, who of course one special feature of the pastimes of Lord Rama is that he appears as a human being. Of course, that's also true for Krishna and Vamana, but he's so much enacting the pastimes of a human being that it's almost as if he's forgotten that he's the Supreme Lord. But there's one incident that he showed to Mandodari once, the form of himself, but of course he's very famous as Kodandaram, the holder of the Ram, who's the holder of the bow. But in this one particular time, he showed his form as Chakra Gadadhara to her, Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, who he descended in this world to kill. I don't know this. Now, there's somewhat elaborate explanation given by the various commentators here about these five weapons. They are, of course, all personalities. Everything in the spiritual world is personal. And these five personalities, they're great devotees who take these forms in order to serve the Lord, particularly in this world. His mission is to destroy the demons, to enjoy pastimes by destroying the demons, and in this way to protect the devotees. So they take these forms, great devotees. They also appear as various great devotees within this world, in this Kali Yuga, as what are known in the Sri Vaishnava tradition as the Alvas. I know that's not the proper Tamil pronunciation, but it's good enough. These five are also personification of the five Shaktis of the Lord. Of course, he has unlimited Shaktis, unlimited energies. Parasya Shakti Avivid Haiva Shruyate Swabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. That is described in the Vedas, in Shvetashvata Upanishad, that the Supreme Lord, he has many potencies that are known in different ways. They're natural potencies of his. And particularly there, the Jnana Shakti, the Bala Shakti, and the Kriya Shakti are mentioned, the knowledge potency, the power potency, and the action potency. You please come sit here, then you won't have your back to Srila Prabhupada. Or you can sit back there also. So these five Shaktis, they are concerned with Srishti, Stiti, Sanghara, Nigraha, and Anugraha. Srishti, if you're translating into Telugu, you don't need to translate it. Srishti is creation. Stiti is maintenance of the material. This is all concerned with the material world. Sanghara means destruction. Nigraha means control or punishment. And anugraha means, they're almost opposite words. Nigraha and anugraha means to show favor, to bless. So these five Mahayudhas, these are great weapons of the Supreme Lord. They are part of, they're integral. This is very much the Ramanuja philosophy of Sharira Shariri Bhav, which is the understanding, it's very similar to the Achintya Bheda Bheda of the Gauriyas, in which they say that everything is part of the Supreme Lord in as much as everything constitutes his body, and yet his body is somewhat different from that which constitutes it. So these five Maha Shaktis, they are integral to his Shuddha Sattva, completely, totally, transcendentally pure form. And they act in his functions of creation, protection, destruction, punishment, and blessings. This has been discussed a little bit previously in name 544. Also in the Vishnu Purana, it's stated that these five weapons, they support various functions of the Supreme Lord within the material world, namely egoism. That his conchal and his bow support that. As his chakra, he supports the mind. Just like Lord Vishnu's chakra, it goes so fast, flies through the sky. So the mind is like that also. It goes always flying here and there. For those who are not stitadhi muni, for those whose intelligence is not fixed, the mind is always moving like the chanchalam himana Krishna. Pramati balavadriham tasyaham nigraham manye vayoriva sudushkaram. Arjuna said that the mind is flickering. It's impossible to control. It's just like the wind which is blowing here and there. I just want to make a note. Oh, where's my diary? Chanchala himana Krishna. And Arjuna protested. He refutes practically everything that Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita up to that point, which is largely discussing how to control the mind, beginning with the description of the sthita dhimuni. So the vidya, the potency of vidya is recommended by his sword. Gyanasi is mentioned in various ways, is mentioned in Bhagavatam. The sword of knowledge which cuts through the ignorance of attachment to this material world. And buddhi, the intelligence that abides in the form of the gada, the club. So in this way, these five weapons, they constitute various energies of the Lord. And by studying their functions in his service within the material world, can be understood everything that is knowledge, everything that is ignorance, all that exists, all that does not exist, sat, asat, all that is eternal, that all that is temporary, everything is centered him in him. He is time, he is earth, he is sky, he is beyond the sky, the Mahakash, the heavenly worlds, etc. Now this meaning, Shankar Chakragadadha, is also given by Baladev Vidyabhushan. Discussion of the Sudarshan Chakra. Generally this is considered to be the most important among the weapons of the Supreme Lord. It's his eternal weapon. Lord Vishnu is the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead. And his weapon is eternally with him. But just as, even though he's eternal, he appears to be born from the womb of Devaki, so in the same way, even though when he was born, he was holding his weapons, but then we don't hear anything about him having the Sudarshan Chakra in Vrindavan. He was killing demons, but we don't hear about any Sudarshan Chakra. He didn't manifest that while he was in Vrindavan. That was given to him by Agnidev. So how can Agnidev give to the Supreme Lord that which is already his, eternally? It's a pastime, just as giving birth to him is a pastime. When the Kandava forest was to be burned, Agnidev had requested the help of Arjuna to frustrate Arjuna's own father, Indra, by burning that forest, so that Agnidev, who had become weak, he could eat all the herbs by burning that forest. So he gave to Krishna at this time the Sudarshan Chakra, whose hub or the central part is just like a thunderbolt. So it's stated there in Mahabharata that holding this weapon, which is fiery like Agni, Lord Krishna was ready to perform his pastimes. And actually he killed many demons after that. And in many of his killing of demons described after that, that's via Sudarshan Chakra. Narakasura, we're mentioning Arjuna satisfying Agni with the help of Krishna. Indra was the father, so also Krishna killed Narakasura, who was his son, with this Sudarshan Chakra. Agni, after giving this to Krishna, he told him that with this weapon, you will always be victorious in battle. Of course, Krishna is always victorious in battle anyway, but we have to remember that he's performing his pastimes as if a human being. You'll be able to defeat even superhuman opponents because Krishna appears like a human. So humans, they're always inferior to the great demigods and even the sub-demigods like the Gandharvas. So Agni told him, with this weapon you can conquer even beings that appear to be superior to you. And certainly Nagas, Rakshasas, Pisachas, and Daityas, however powerful your enemy may be, this Sudarshan Chakra will render you victorious in battle. As if Sudarshan is giving power to Krishna. Actually, Krishna gives the Sudarshan Chakra is powerful because of Krishna. It's not that Krishna is powerful because of the Sudarshan Chakra. But again, it may appear like that in Krishna's pastimes. He says, Agni said to Krishna that when you throw this weapon, it will strike down the enemy in battle, will never be defeated, and will immediately return to you. And there's also a description how Sudarshan Chakra goes very quickly, destroys all the opponents, and comes back very quickly. Why so quick? Because he doesn't want to be away from the Lord's hand. Doesn't want to be away from him, even for a moment. So that's why he's so quick. Sudarshan Chakra was also... There are so many pastimes of him, Krishna, using that. In the destruction of the city of Varanasi, Krishna sent Sudarshan Chakra for that purpose. At this time, when Krishna received this weapon, Arjuna also received from Agni Gandiva, which is instrumental in the battle of Kurukshetra and in all the fighting that Arjuna did after that. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in the sixth canto, in Narayana Kavacha, the Sudarshan Chakra is described thus. Set into motion by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and wandering in all the four directions, the disc of the Supreme Lord has sharp edges as destructive as the fire of devastation at the end of the millennium. As a blazing fire burns dry grass to ashes with the assistance of that breeze, may that Sudarshan Chakra burn our enemies to ashes. In the ninth canto of Bhagavatam, Sudarshan Chakra appears to attack Durvasa Muni. Is that correct? Yeah, but the main point is that he's not coming specifically to attack Durvasa, but to protect Ambarish. Why was he attacking Durvasa? Because Ambarish was threatened. Because Ambarish was such a great devotee that Vishnu had assigned Sudarshan that you protect him. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. My devotee is never destroyed. Krishna told Arjuna, you announce this. So Ambarish he was fully engaged in devotional service. A king naturally has enemies. In this material world, pretty much everyone has enemies. And the higher you go, the more the enemies you have. Especially kings, they can be expected to have enemies. But Ambarish, he was very saintly, he was fully devoted to activities of pure devotion. So he wasn't making much endeavor to protect himself. Kings, it may be considered such a great boon to be a king. You're so rich and famous and powerful, but it's not an easy life. You can't even, you can never be safe. You can't even eat the food. You have to have someone taste the food before you eat it. Otherwise, someone may be poisoning you. You always have, all the time, you have to have your spies to see how people, they may be plotting against me, and can you fully trust the spies? That also, you can't be sure. So it's like playing a game of chess, except that if you lose, what happens in chess? Checkmate, the king is trapped, but you're the king, and you're finished. So Ambarish, he wasn't concerned with all this, but Sudarshan Chakra was protecting him by the order of the Supreme Lord. And at one point, Ambarish prayed to the Sudarshan in this way. Ambarisha uvacha, tvam agne bhagavan suryas, tvam somo jyoti shampatihi, tvam apas, tvam kshitir vyoma, vayor matrindi arnicha. Maharaj Ambarish said, O Sudarshan Chakra, you are fire, you are the most powerful sun, and you are the moon, the master of all luminaries. You are water, earth and sky, you are the air, you are the five sense objects, sound, touch, form, taste and smell, and you are the senses also. This kind of description is usually given to the Supreme Lord himself, that all powerful entities, they reside in him. Fire, the scorching sun, and so on. So why is this being described about Sudarshan? Because the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, has invested all the potencies of all the great demigods in Sudarshan. So he acts as powerfully as the Supreme Lord himself in the matter of destruction. Then Ambarish continued, Sudarshanam namastubhyam sahasrarachuta priya sarvastra ghatin vipraya swasti bhuya iraspate. O most favorite of Achyuta, his name is given here as Achyuta Priya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Achyuta means who is infallible, who is never defeated, who never falls from his position. So Achyuta Priya is a general name for Vaishnavas, and specifically given here is a name of Sudarshan, which means that by the grace of the Supreme Lord, he also will never be defeated, will never fall down. You have thousands of spokes. What's the word for spoke in Telugu? Oh, it sounds like a Telugu word, not a Sanskrit word particularly. O master of the material world, destroyer of all weapons, original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Kindly give shelter and be auspicious to this brahmana, because this brahmana refers to Durvasa. Tvam dharmas tvam ritam satyam tvam yagyo kila yagya bhuk tvam lokapala sarvatma tvam teja paurusham param. So in this way he's addressing Sudarshan with names or qualities that actually belong to the Supreme Lord, but again, they are reposed in Sudarshan as the representative of the Supreme Lord. Ambarish says that you are Dharma, Ritam and Satyam. So these three words, they are largely interchangeable, especially Ritam and Satyam. They're both translated as truth, and Dharma is sometimes translated as religion. I don't know how you're going to translate this in Telugu. You are Yajna. You are the enjoyer of all Yajnas, Akhila Yajna Bhuk. You are the protector of all the planets and people, the entire universe, the maintainer. You are the supreme transcendental prowess in the hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And again, you are the original vision of the Supreme Lord, and therefore you are known as Sudarshan. Everything has been created by your activities, and therefore you are all pervading. Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse regarding Sudarshan. The word Sudarshan means auspicious vision. From Vedic instructions, we understand that this material world is created by the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sa Aikshata, Sa Asrujata. The Supreme Personality of Godhead glanced over the Mahatattva, or the total material energy, and when it was agitated, everything came into existence. The Lord's glance is the original cause of material creation. Then next verse, spoken in praise of Sudarshan by Ambarish Maharaj. Namasu na bha kela dharma se tave hyadharma shila suta dhuma ke tave trilokya gopaya vishuddha varchase mano java yad bhuta karmane gurne. O Sudarshan, you have a very auspicious hub, and therefore you are the upholder of all religion. You are just like... just before I read this, Sudarshan means most auspicious, is it not? Su. Su means auspicious. But here he's being... Just now, Ambarish will say that he's inauspicious. How is that inauspicious? For those who are demons, they see him as inauspicious, because their whole way of thinking is back to front. So he comes to kill the demons, so from their point of view, he's inauspicious. You, Sudarshan, Ambarish says, are just like an inauspicious comet for the irreligious demons. Indeed, you are the maintainer of the three worlds. You are full of transcendental effulgence. You are as quick as the mind, again said, and you are able to work wonders. I simply utter the word Namaha, offering all obeisances unto you. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The disc of the Lord is called Sudarshana because he does not discriminate between high and low criminals or demons. In other words, everyone who is demoniac is subject to punishment. Just in the category of thieves, there is Hirachar and Kirachar, the stealer of a diamond and stealer of a cucumber. So stealer of a diamond is more heavily punished than the stealer of a cucumber. But they're both punished. Durvasamuni, continuing Prabhupada's purport. Durvasamuni was certainly a powerful brahmana, but his acts against the pure devotee Maharaj Ambarish were no better than the activities of asuras. Durvasa was very proud of being a great brahmana, but actually he was acting like an asura. As stated in the shastras, dharmang tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. The word dharma refers to the orders or laws given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja. Real dharma is surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, real dharma means bhakti or devotional service to the Lord. The Sudarshan Chakra is here addressed as Dharma Setave, the protector of dharma. I just want to make a point about that also. Maharaj Ambarish was a truly religious person, and consequently for his protection, the Sudarshan Chakra was ready to punish even such a strict brahmana as Durvasa Muni, because he had acted like a demon. Just commenting on this word, strict brahmana, we can understand that Durvasa Muni, he was following all the principles of brahminical life. It was not just that he's a Brahmin in name only, but he was following all the principles. He'd become such a powerful yogi by following strictly the principles of brahminical life. But still, he's being dealt with like a demon. Yayata mang prapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajami aham. Krishna says, as people behave toward me, I reciprocally behave toward them. So he was acting like a demon by attacking a great devotee. And therefore, even though he was following all the pure rituals of brahminical life, he had to be punished. Srila Prabhupada continues in the purport, there are demons even in the form of brahmanas. Rakshasim kalimashritya jayate brahma yonishu is from the, which Purana, I can't remember, quoted in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that in Kali Yuga there will be many demons who take birth in the from the wombs of brahmanas. And that's described that although Krishna killed many demons when he was present in this world, many others escaped and were born in the womb of brahmanas in Kali Yuga. And that would particularly refer to those who, although brahmanas, they misrepresent the Vedas as promoting the supreme to be devoid of personality or form. In other words, Advaitavadis or Mayavadis. They give too much importance to statements like Aparni Pado, but they he has no hands or legs. But Javano Grahita, they don't see the other side, that he accepts everything. So, Srila Prabhupada continues here. Therefore, the Sudarshan Chakra does not discriminate between Brahmana demons and Shudra demons. Anyone against the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees is called a demon. In the Shastra, we find many Brahmanas and Kshatriyas who acted as demons and have been described as demons. According to the verdict of the Shastras, one has to be understood according to his symptoms. Yasya yal lakshanam proktam pungso ipan abhivan abhivyanjakam tattainayava vinir dishit. Missing one line there. Statement that Srila Prabhupada often quoted from the seventh canto of Bhagavatam. Yadanyatrapi drishyeta tat vinir. No, I'm forgetting. That after Narad Muni had described the various symptoms or the characteristics of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, he said that even if someone is born in a certain family, but he shows the characteristics of someone else in another varna, then he should be accepted as such. In other words, if a so-called brahmana acts as a Shudra, he should be understood as a Shudra. And the so-called Shudra, if he has the characteristics of a Brahmana, should be understood to be a Brahmana. And then, if one is born of a Brahmana father but his symptoms are demoniac, he is regarded as a demon. The Sudarshan Chakra is always concerned with annihilating the demons. Therefore, he is described as Adharma Shilasara Dhumaketave. Those who are not devotees are called Adharma Shila. Adharma Shila means their very characteristic is to be non-dharmic, or they're just attached. They like to be against dharma or non-dharmic. The Sudarshan Chakra is just like an inauspicious comet for all such demons. Then the next verse spoken by Ambarish Maharaj, Tejasa Dharma Mayena Sanghritam Tamah Prakashas Chadrisho Mahatmanam Duratyayaste Mahima Girangpate Tadrupame Tatsadasat Paravaram. O Master of Speech, by your effulgence full of religious principles, the darkness of the world is dissipated and the knowledge of learned persons or great souls is manifested. Indeed, no one can surpass your effulgence. For all things manifested and unmanifested, gross and subtle, superior and inferior, are but various forms of you that are manifested by your effulgence. Srila Prabhupada's purport: without illumination, nothing can be seen, especially in this material world. The illumination in this world emanates from the effulgence of Sudarshan. Did you know that? Now it's daytime. We can't see the sun as it's the monsoon season and the sky is covered by clouds. But still the sun's light is so powerful that from such a distance, even though the sky is covered by clouds, we can see everything very clearly. But the illumination in this world comes... illumination, that by which we can see, darshan, we can see, that is coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead via Sudarshan, who is the original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So his act, the Supreme Lord's act of seeing, is personified as Sudarshan. Especially Prabhupada has mentioned here, by his seeing, he creates this whole material manifestation. The illuminating principles of the sun, the moon, and fire emanate from Sudarshan. So we can remember that. Where there's light, we can see. That light comes from him. Similarly, illumination by knowledge also comes from Sudarshan. These are very important points. Knowledge is often acquired, is often compared to light. In English, there's a saying, someone, he saw the light, which means that he had not understood something and now he has understood. Gyanena tu, what is that? Gyanena tu tadagyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham aditya vajgyanam prakashyati tat param. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that someone may be deeply in ignorance, but when the sun of knowledge arises, it's a upama, it's an analogy, then when the sun of knowledge arises, then you can see everything very clearly. All the ignorance is dispelled. So similarly, Sudarshan gives the light by which we can see with the eyes, and he also is instrumental in giving the knowledge by which we can actually see things as they are. With our eyes we can see, or I can see from this vantage point, but you can't see because you have your back to the trees outside. So I can see the trees. And anyone, most human beings, unless they're blind or have cataracts, they can see the tree. But when we see with the eye of transcendental knowledge given by Sudarshan, we can see, what is this tree? This tree is a living being who has forgotten Krishna and is embodied in this form. So we see everything through Shastra Chakshu, the eye of knowledge given in Shastra, or Jnana Chakshu, by which we see how living beings, Utkramantam Stitam Vapi, Bhunjanam Vagunan Vitam, Vimurhan Nanu Pashanti Pashanti, Jnana Chakshu Shaha. Foolish people, they only see a tree. Or they only see this world, but they don't see how this, what is this tree? This is a living being who has transmigrated into this body. They don't see that. Even though this principle of transmigration is that which the whole universe is running on that, but they don't see that. They only see in a very peripheral way. Those who have the eye of knowledge, they can see this. Others are foolish and they don't see it. Illumination by knowledge also comes from Sudarshan, because with the illumination of Sudarshan one can distinguish one thing from another, the superior from the inferior. So always we distinguish superior from inferior, just like superior, inferior. I'm just talking about trees. So a teak tree will be considered superior to a shal tree. I don't know if there's any English word. There probably is. Both give very hard wood, but teak is exceptionally hard and it's much more costly. Or the sandalwood tree, chandan tree, is always considered superior to the thorn tree. We have hundreds of thorn trees growing out the back there. The mango tree is considered superior to the neem tree. Ramananda Rai, I believe, states in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita I can't remember the Bengali. Kain Gyana Nimba Folly. Abhagya Gyani Kai Gyana Nimba Folly. Rasik Kokil Kai Amramokuli. Exactly, I can't remember. That the unfortunate so-called Gyanis, Arasagya Kak Chushe, Gyana Nimba Folly. They're those who are devoid of the knowledge of the rasa, the blissful mellows of Krishna consciousness. They are like crows who like to eat the neem, the neem fruit, very bitter. And the rasagya kokil and kak, the Srila Prabhupada translates kokil as cuckoo, and kak, kak, crows. They are inferior. So the devotee is like a rasagya. He likes to eat the buds of the mango tree. So different tastes, high class, low class. So we can distinguish one thing from another. Now, generally people, Srila Prabhupada gives an example here, that distinguishing the superior from the inferior, generally people accept a powerful yogi like Durvasa Muni as wonderfully superior. If some yogi comes here and he starts making fire come from his hair and vibhuti from his hand, touches people and heals them, then in a short time there'll be crowds of people coming for his magic tricks. So generally people accept a powerful yogi like Durvasa Muni as wonderfully superior, but if such a person is chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, we can see his real identity and understand how inferior he is because of his dealings with devotees. So maybe a yogi who can make fire come from his hair and ashes come from his hands, but he's inferior. He'll be punished for his tricks and using those tricks to pretend that he is superior. Even to pretend that he's the Supreme Lord will be severely punished. Then, next verse, Yada vistrutas tvam ananjanena vai balam pravishto jita daitya danavam bahudaror vangri shirodharani rishchanda jasrang pradhane virajase. O indefatigable one, when you are sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to enter among the soldiers of the Daityas and the Danavas, you stay on the battlefield and unendingly separate their arms, bellies, thighs, legs, and heads. Svatang jagat trana kala prahanaye nirupita sarva saho gada bhrita viprasya chasmat kula daiva hetave viprasya chasmat kula daiva hetave vidhehi bhadrang tad anugraho hi naha. O protector of the universe, you are engaged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his all-powerful weapon in killing the envious enemies. I think we're missing part of this translation here. So in this way, Ambarish praises Sudarshan Chakra. In Harivansha also, Sudarshan is described. When Krishna and Arjuna, they went beyond the universe to see Mahavishnu. So they're driving with the horses on Krishna's chariot. They went across all the various planetary systems, all the different dvipas. They crossed the Loka mountain and they entered the region of great darkness where the sun rays do not come. And then in the great darkness, the horses appeared to stumble, even though they're Krishna's personal associates, but because Krishna is acting as if human, so the horses also contributed to this pastime. And then Krishna called Sudarshan, and he came and lit up the whole area just like the sun. So Sudarshan is described there in Harivansha as having 1,000 spokes, is capable of destroying all enemies, brilliant like blazing fire. Have you sometimes seen a huge fire? It's very, it captures our mind. It's something wonderful. I saw once in Los Angeles, there was some gas leak or something, and it was on fire, and there was a huge, like a stumba, a pillar of fire. So if you see that, it captures the mind. It's something amazing. So Sudarshan is brilliant like blazing fire, which is frightening and beautiful. Frightening and beautiful, both. Seem to be contradictory. Beautiful and therefore called Sudarshan. Very nice very nice to see. He gives very nice vision and he's very nice to see. These are names, meaning of the name Sudarshan, which has edges made of gold, whose navel is as hard as a thunderbolt, which creates fear in the minds of demons, which is nourished by the blood, bones, and marrows of the demons, which is unexcelled in the art of punishment, has a circle of sharp blades around it that resembles a garland of flowers. I don't know if they have that in India now, but in the West they have these circular saws, these machine saws, which maybe a chainsaw or maybe fixed. So it's something like Sudarshan, has teeth like that, which goes, cuts through wood or whatever. Is capable of assuming any form and will at will and moving about at will, because he's invested with all yogic potencies, which was personally created by Brahma. Just see. Created by Brahma, even though he's the eternal weapon of the Supreme Lord, for the purpose of curbing the demons, always remains absorbed in gratifying the anger of the great sages that are disturbed by demons, which always awaits an opportunity to strike, the attack of whom causes all moving and non-moving living entities within the three worlds to become bewildered, and which gives pleasure during battle to those who eat flesh. What does that mean? Well, maybe the jackals and vultures, if they say, oh, Sudarshan's come, good, we're going to have some good meal today. Oh, I'd said that about Agni giving Sudarshan chakra. At the same time, Varuna came and gave Komadaki to Krishna. So they're both given to Krishna at the same time. We talk a little bit about Komadaki. There's not so much in the Shastras that we are generally aware of about Komadaki. It's described in the third canto of Bhagavatam, in Kapiladeva's instructions to his mother, that one should meditate on the form of the Supreme Lord. The yogi, he states, means the bhakti yogi, should meditate upon his club, which is named Komadaki and is very dear to him. This club smashes the demons, who are always inimical soldiers, and is smeared with their blood. A description from the 10th canto of Bhagavatam of one of the demons, Dantavakra, who was killed by Krishna's club. He's actually a major demon, being a incarnation of Vijay, but we don't hear much about him. We hear much about Shishupal, but giant Vijay came as Ravana. First of all as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, then Ravana and Kumbhakarna, then Shishupal and Dantavakra. But we don't hear much about Dantavakra. But his death is described. He was hit. Krishna was first of all hit by Dantavakra's club, but Krishna didn't even budge. Just with all his strength, he hit Krishna, but Krishna didn't budge at all. But rather, Krishna pulled out wielded his massive Komadaki club and struck Dantavakra in the middle of his chest. Dantavakra's heart shattered by that blow. He vomited blood, fell lifeless to the ground with his hair disheveled and his arms and legs sprawling. So there's a description of Krishna, Vishnu, who is Chakra Gadadha. Just prior to this, we've had names like Guhya, Gabhira, Gahana, Gupta, which means secret, not very well known, not much known. You may think, well, it's a chain. The names don't seem to fit very much together. There's a different category of names. Gabhira, Gambhira, Gupta, gahana, and then why chakra gadadha? Well, it's a contrast. It's a different concept. On the one hand, we have he who is hardly known, very difficult to know. On the other hand, we have a description of, this is not written down, so you have to translate. Just as, on the other hand, we have him appearing in ways which seem to be quite human. He's not the only one to have weapons. It's a common thing in this world to have weapons, especially for the Kshatriyas, and killing others. If we hear about the Supreme being very remote and distant and subtle and difficult to understand, inconceivable, many people who have a concept of the Supreme as being impersonal, they will relate to that. But then we find he's intensely personal to the extent that he is killing others. That's a very personal activity, to lift a club and smash someone with it. Now, of course, nowadays war is more and more being fought by robots or drones. Now, another explanation, when we have names like Gahana, Guha, Guhya, he's very subtle and difficult to understand. That can be contrasted with Chakra Gadadhara in another way. That Chakra Gadadhara, the wielder of the weapons to protect his devotees and destroy the demons, this reveals the majestic aspect of the Supreme Lord. It shows his all power. Of course, his all power is always manifested. Every day, so many living beings come into being. So many people are born. So many people die. There are great floods. There are great earthquakes. So this is all the power of the Supreme Lord. When he comes personally, you can understand. You might think it's some. Otherwise, you might think it's just some impersonal power. People say nature. There's an earthquake. What's that? Nature. So they might, and people do. The atheistic people say, "Hey, no God. It's just nature." But when he personally comes, we can understand. Nature, but there's a person there. So this demonstrates his power. It's personally shown his power. But for the Gauriyas especially, they emphasize his very sweet pastimes, in which this is a major point that in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, practically in the especially in the teachings to Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described the opulence of Krishna as the original form of the personalities of Godhead, were all powerful. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went on to describe the very great sweetness of Krishna as being the Supreme Lord, who, although he is the Supreme Lord, he interacts with his devotees in a manner that simply increases their love for him, masking his opulence, masking his power. So many names in this Vishnu Sahasranama, they invoke our awe toward him, so that we can understand that he is powerful. We are not powerful. He is supreme. We are subordinate to him. In our own best interest, we should take shelter in him and try, instead of trying to be equal to him or trying to enjoy this world separately from him. So in this way, we come to the platform of Sharanagati, the platform of taking shelter in Him. And indeed, this is one of His names, Sharana, shelter. This is one of the names given in Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, the whole Vishnu Sahasranama encourages that. It projects a an understanding of the Supreme Lord as being supreme, as being very kind to His devotees, and therefore worth taking shelter of. He's known as Sharanyam, the one in who we should take shelter. He's, if we take shelter of Him, that's the proper place to take shelter. Otherwise, if we take shelter of the asat sainya, the useless, or the soul, we think we'll be protected. Deha patya kalatra adishu asat sainya ishva satsvat. We take shelter of our relatives, our wife or husband or children, but they cannot protect us. So the real person to take shelter of is Krishna. Samashruta ye pada pallava plavang mahatpadang punya yashomarare bhavambadhi vatsa padang parang padang 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 yat vipadang natesham. In this material world, there is danger at every step. But if we take shelter at the lotus feet of He who is known as Murari, who can kill even the most dangerous demons, then we can easily cross over this material world, which is like a great ocean. We can easily cross over it, just like we can easily cross over the water in a calf's hoof print. Similarly, Devarshir, Bhutapta, Nrinang, Pitrinam, Nakinkara, Naim, Renicha, Rajan, Sarvatmana, Yah, Sharanang, Sharanyam, Katoma, Kondam, Parihritya, Karatum. This name or quality, Sharanyam, is given here. That in this material world, we're always indebted to others. We have to repay these debts to the demigods who give us light, heat, air, food, water, and so on. To the great rishis who give us knowledge. To the living beings in general who help us in various ways, particularly to our own relatives. And to all other humans, we all interact with others. So we have debts to others. But if we fully take shelter of He who is worth taking shelter of, then we have no other shelter. Then we need not take shelter of others. He will fully shelter us, and He will release us from all debts, all bondage, all suffering. And therefore, He is known as Mukunda. He is Sharanyam. He is the one worth taking shelter of. And the Gauriyas also teach this, that we should follow the path of Sharanagati. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Jibe Daya Kari Saparshada Shriya Dhamma Shaha Avatari Atantar Durlabha Prema Karibari Dan Shikai Sharanagati Bhakatera Pran. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who is the Prabhu, the Supreme Lord, showing mercy, or out of mercy, to the conditioned souls, descended with the, in this material world along with His associates and His own dham, Navari dham. And what did He do? He gave the most rare love of God. He gave that. How did He give it? By teaching the process of Sharanagati, which is the very life of the devotees. So that Adyanta Durlabha Prema is to be had by taking shelter in Him. But the very characteristic of that Prema is that when one comes to that level, then one no longer thinks of taking shelter in him, but one thinks of giving shelter to him. And this is the Gaudiya understanding of names like Guhya, Gahana, Gambhira, Gupta. It's very secret how Krishna becomes subordinate to his devotees. This is particularly in his Vrindavan pastimes. Itidrik swalilabhir ananda kunde swaghosham nimajjantam akapayantam tadiyeshitageshu bhaktarjitatvam punah prematastam shatavriti vande. In Damodar Ashtakam, he's prayed that it first of all describes Krishna running away in fear from his mother, he who the whole world is afraid of. Why should they be afraid of if he's the shelter? Because they don't take shelter of him. Therefore he comes with his club and his chakra to destroy the demons. So people are afraid of him. But he becomes afraid of Mother Yashoda, and by performing such pastimes, he immerses his devotees in the pools of ecstasy. Which kind of devotees? Those devotees who are not concerned with his great opulence, who don't worship him because he's there with his chakra and his club. We may worship him, first of all, I better worship him, otherwise I'll be a Devasa Muni. I'll have my head chopped off with the chakra. Or I'll get smashed by the Sudarshan chakra. That's compared to the wheel of time. If I don't worship Krishna, I'll be caught in repeated birth and death. So I better worship him. So that's one way of worshipping Krishna. Another way is that in this material world I'm so afraid, but Krishna will protect me. But when the devotee comes to the platform of not recognizing Krishna's opulence, they think Krishna is dependent on me, like Mother Yashoda thought she could punish Krishna, then devotees who think like that, they have completely gone beyond the platform of recognizing Krishna's opulence. Just in pure love, they think they can give shelter to Krishna, and they think they can even punish Krishna, at least Mother Yashoda. So this conception is very secret and subtle and deep and cannot be appreciated by everyone. The ultimate, what is the ultimate? Mame kam sharanam raja in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, give up everything, fully surrender to me. This is known as the charama shloka, the ultimate instruction. Take full shelter only in Krishna. But ultimately, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches that when someone is on the platform that Krishna takes shelter in us, that is the platform of pure love. Yashoda chastises Krishna. Krishna looks up to Yashoda as if she is superior to him. He is tied up by her. The ultimate or highest level of this is expressed by Sri Krishna. This is recorded in Sri Gita Govinda. The author of this, Jayadeva Goswami, we say the author, but it's not like a mundane person writing a mundane book. Rather, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna have appeared within his mind, and like a puppet, he is transferring that from his transcendental mind and writing that down. So when he came to this point, he came to a certain point where he could not write. Some thought came in his mind, But he could not write it because he thought, this is too much. This Krishna is the Supreme Lord. What is this? I cannot write this. Those words, Krishna speaking to Radharani, after Radharani has become very angry with Krishna and says, I don't want to see you anymore. She rejects Krishna. Everyone in this material world is rejecting Krishna. They are demons. Krishna comes to redeem them and teach them. Mame kam sharanam raja. And those who are inveterate demons, he gives them the chakra gada treatment. But here we find that Radharani rejects Krishna, and Krishna helplessly, tries to take shelter of her. Smaragarala khandanam marashirasi mandanam dehipadda pallava mudaram. That he's praying for the mercy of Radharani, that you please place your feet on my head. Give your merciful lotus feet to me. So this is the ultimate secret, which is actually not very widely understood. It's not to be understood, it's to be experienced. This is the highest level. So Krishna's chakra, gadadhar. But he's also the most sweet. While carrying weapons, he's also sweet, not to the demons. They don't know any sweetness, to the devotees. But that sweetness that the devotees find in meditating on him in this form, that is increased unlimitedly in his Vrindavan pastimes, which becomes sweeter and sweeter as we go to consideration of him as Yashoda Nandana, the darling child of Yashoda, and even more so to the zenith degree in his pastimes with Radharani. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's particular contribution. Unatojvala rasamsh swabhakti shriyam. The topmost resplendent mellow of devotion to his very self. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Anything? No question? Then Hare Krishna.